You are listening to Boston Public Radio. I am Edgar B. Herwick III. You might be tipped off by that sound that there's some sports coming up, and it is. It's a time of year when sports is dominating the weekend. So on Monday, we're going to take a look at what's going on. Of course, the NFL is squarely in the news with the playoffs, and the Patriots will be coming up next week, coming off a bye. We've got the College National Football Championship happening tonight, but before we get into all of that, there is one story that's looming larger than all others, and that is the NHL with an 11th-hour deal saving their season, or so it appears. I'm right now in the studio with Eric Wilbur, who is a Boston.com sports blogger and reporter. We're going to walk through some of the sports that happened this weekend and what's going on in the sports world. Eric, thanks for being with us on Boston Public Radio. First time.
Yep, thanks for having me. This is great.
Yeah. So the NHL, big story. This is, I guess, yesterday morning. They finally reached a deal. I'm going to play a little bit of sound. This is Commissioner Gary Bettman and Don Fehr, who is the head of the players union representing the players. And they came bleary-eyed out to make an announcement. And here's a little bit of what they had to say.
Good morning, everyone. Don Fehr and I are here to tell you that we have reached an agreement on the framework of a new collective bargaining agreement. The details of which need to be put to paper. We've got to dot a lot of I's, cross a lot of T's. There's still a lot of work to be done, but the basic framework of the deal has been agreed upon. We have to go through a ratification process. The Board of Governors has to approve it from the league side. Obviously, the players have to approve it as well.
Could this guy sound any less excited that they just saved the season?
He's unbelievable.
I mean, I got to give it, I mean, maybe because they were, you know, apparently up for hours and hours and weeks at this, so I get it. Don Fehr, if there's video of this, he actually looks like he's asleep as Gary Bettman's talking, but he does not sound very excited at all.
No, it was funny. You know, it was about 5 a.m. yesterday when I found out the news and, you know, going through my Twitter feed. It was interesting seeing all these reporters' tweets at, you know, 2:30 in the morning, 3:30 in the morning, and they were just, you know, clearly exhausted over this process. The deal is done. You know, who knows whether it's better for the players or for the owners. All that really matters is that hockey is coming back right now. And since it's an 8-year deal or a 10-year deal, each side can opt out after 8.
Okay.
We're assured of having the NHL in a non-lockout season for at least 8 years, which is fantastic news for fans that have, you know, suffered through this 3 times now. I mean, it just gets to a point where they had to get something done. I mean, if they canceled the season for the second time in 8 seasons, the fans probably wouldn't come back. Maybe they would come back here. Maybe they would come back in Montreal. But in places like, you know, Miami and Tampa Bay and Columbus.
Phoenix.
Yeah. They just, hockey isn't in their blood like it is in, you know, in Montreal and Toronto and Boston. So they were really risking that coming down the pike. And, you know, it's for a league that's been had this many problems in this many years, they simply could not go down that road. So it's a deal. It's in place. And it's, you know, hockey's back. But whether it's better for the fans are who missed it 3 months or if the owners won or the players won, I don't really think we can say that right now.
What's your sense when you sort of talk to either players or major fans of the Bruins or even other teams? How much was hockey missed, or wasn't it?
It was here. You know, again, I don't think in a lot of cities it was as much. You know, in New York and Boston, you know, everywhere in Canada, obviously, people were frothing. They wanted their hockey back. And here, there was a definite void, especially with the Celtics being up and down.
Yeah.
You know, that winter sport was really missing. And then in a few weeks, or hopefully it's not just 1 week, you know, when you lose the Patriots, there was really going to be some itching at that point. So the fact that they're going to be back, I guess Martin Luther King Day matinee is the believed when they're going to start the season here. So it's only a couple weeks away, and they've got a lot of work to do. They got a lot of training. A lot of these guys have been playing overseas and have been playing well, but you know, to get back onto Claude Julien and get used to his system on the ice is going to be pivotal, and that's what we're going to see maybe, you know, when training camp opens on Saturday. The exhibition schedule has already been wiped out, so there will be no exhibition games. I think the Bruins are hoping that they can play Providence, you know, one game just to kind of get their legs under them.
Providence is the minor league team,
yes,
is that right?
Correct.
So, you know, what kind of trickle-down effect is there when there's a lockout like this? Like, you know, as you were saying before, the NHL lost an entire season a few years ago. An entire season. you know, these players and the owners, they all make a lot of money. And, you know, while I'm sure it's a strain for them to get through this, they're going to be fine. But what I always think about is what happens to, I mean, how far does the trickle-down effect go? What happens to people who work for the Bruins or the Zamboni driver or people who work in the concession stands or the cab drivers who are driving people to and from? I mean, do they really feel the effects of this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's... I wrote about this a little bit yesterday, and that's part of this deal that makes me so happy, is that people are going to go back to the Harp. They're going to go back to the Sports Grill, Boston Beer Works. All these people that have had skeleton staffs because there's been no games are finally going to have their livelihood back. So it's almost – it's going to be a pleasure to go to those places and tip those people and say, you know, it's been a hard time for you. The slippery part of this is, you know, go to the games. We're all going to watch hockey. How do you send your message, though? Yeah, and maybe it's that you don't buy concessions and feed Jeremy Jacobs the owner's pockets a little bit, but then you're hurting the concession stand workers. So it's kind of like nobody really wins in the situation, and a whole lot of people lose. And from the business side of the NHL, you know, they don't really care about the cab drivers and the parking lot attendants, but those are the people that were most affected by this.
Yeah. I mean,
millions of dollars in revenue. You know, to the city, to the people, to the establishments. It's just, that's money that they won't find. They won't regain it.
Yeah. I'm talking with Eric Wilbur. He's a Boston.com sports blogger, reporter. Without getting into the weeds, what was the major sort of sticking point between owners and players on this? And what's kind of the general resolution?
Yeah, it was a seven, the players under the former agreement were making 57% revenue sharing. The owners came back to them and proposed to them last year that they wanted to knock that down to 43.
So that's a pretty big,
it's a pretty,
big reduction.
Yeah,
and what do you know what 57% is compared to other sports, say like revenue sharing in baseball or in basketball?
It's usually pretty even.
Yeah.
So the fact that the players had a pretty good deal here.
Okay.
And now it's at 50, which is, you know, about par for the course.
50-50. That's 50-50. Straight 50-50.
True.
Which sounds fair. I mean, you know
it
what I mean?
Like,
it sort
fair,
of sounds, just to the average person, you think, why can't it be 50? Well, it should just be 50-50. That's fair. Owners, players, half and half.
Well, there was a lot of thought that the owners weren't going to start the season until now anyway. That, you know, Friday was the drop-dead date to start the season. And a lot of people were of the thought that the owners were going to get that 7% either way. So if they lost the salaries for 2 months, then you know, they would gain it there. So in essence, they're really getting what they wanted in the first year of the deal. So it's going forward. It's going to see. It's going to be who is it more worthwhile for? Did the players win or did the owners win?
Yeah.
And the fans, I don't really think we want to sit here and say, well, you won, you did. You just want to watch hockey. That's all we want.
You think that people are going to come back out? You think that they're going to survive this? At least here in Boston,
sure.
The Bruins fans are going to be there.
Yeah, I think even if they're not there, they're going to watch. You know, the ratings will be high. The Bruins are one of the top three teams in the East. You put the Penguins and maybe the Capitals. I don't know. They're up and down. And the Rangers. So, I mean, this is a very good chance to bring the Stanley Cup back. But a lot of it's going to depend on the goaltending situation. You know, Tim Thomas is gone.
Yeah, let's talk about the Tim Thomas who, you know, for a lot of people became the face of a franchise. I mean, they won a Stanley Cup, and he was one of the more visible players there. So even people who are casual hockey fans or not watching hockey, they kind of knew who Tim Thomas was. He was one of those people. Then he gets wildly outspoken, politically outspoken, sort of in a Tea Party sort of vein, and a lot of on social media, et cetera. And then, remind us, he announced last year something that because of friends and family and faith, he's going to just sit a season out.
The three Fs.
What's he talking about?
I don't know, and it's too bad.
What is going on?
I love the Tim Thomas story.
Yeah. You know, what is the Tim Thomas story?
Well, I mean, kid from Flint, Michigan, went to college at University of Vermont, actually the same time I was across town in college up there, so it was fun to get to watch him in college.
Okay.
And then he was a journeyman for years. He played overseas. I think he was drafted by the Nordiques, I believe. I can't remember who it was.
Oh, the Nordiques. That takes you back.
Yeah, the Colorado Avalanche. And never really found success. And, the Bruins took a flyer on him. And he's just such a determined individual that he made himself the all-star and champion that he is. So I kind of like just respect that story of, never say die. You know, just keep going. I mean, his parents sold their wedding rings to, buy him equipment.
No,
all these just little nuances about Tim Thomas. And now it's just, you don't know what the guy's thinking. You just, at the top of your game, why would you do that. I mean, there's got to be more to the story. And he says he wants to play in the Olympics next year. Who knows if that's going to happen, because I don't think Team USA is just going to grab him.
Yeah.
And he's going to need to find a team to latch onto. And does a team really want to spend a roster spot on a 39-year-old goaltender? So if his career is over, he went out a champion. You know, he led them to that Stanley Cup, and no one can ever take that away from him. I just hope that in a few years his legacy isn't this, and that people remember just how dominant and how great he was during that run in 2011.
Yeah. I'm talking with Eric Wilbur. He is the sports blogger and reporter for Boston.com. We're talking about the Bruins. The NHL has saved their season in the 11th hour. We expect that probably in a little bit under a month, we're going to be having hockey, or around a month from now.
Yeah, could about
be
2 weeks,
hockey.
I think. Yeah, because they got to get going. If it's a 48-game schedule, I guess that means that they'll just start right from where they, you know, would have left off on that on January 19th, if that's indeed the date, and then just go from there and play the rest of the schedule that's remaining.
All right, so hockey coming down the pike.
Which is too bad, because we missed it. The Vancouver Canucks game was canceled. That would have been last week. So,
oh, really?
There will be no Canucks.
And that would be the rematch from the
Stanley Cup. Yeah, so you got to wait for the Stanley Cup finals.
Which was a pretty hard-fought and, you know, and scrappy. You know, those were two teams that didn't like each other.
No, not at all. It was one of the more entertaining playoff series that I've witnessed, and certainly hockey. I mean, that whole run was the Tampa Bay series, where they went to Game 7 and they won 1-0. They beat Montreal in overtime. It was just an unbelievable run that could have ended immediately in the first round, and you know, ultimately was the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, that's true. It was quite a run. So let's move from hockey to football, which is kind of something that's on, I think, a lot of people's minds. Coming off of this weekend, playoff football, the Patriots were off because they have a bye. What happens during a bye week for like the players, for the coaches? What are they doing? Are they like at home watching the games, seeing who they're going to play? Are they at practice? Are they working? What are they doing?
Yeah, there's a little bit of both. You know, I'm sure they were just, you know, relaxing at home watching the game on Saturday night to see who they were going to play, and it ultimately ended up being Houston. But there's a lot of preparation that goes into the bye week, too. It's not like they're just sitting around and twiddling their thumbs and just waiting to see who they're playing. You have to kind of prepare in every instance for who you're going to face. And in this case, obviously, they faced the Texans just last month, so they're very familiar with them. That was a highly anticipated game that didn't turn out to be anything what people thought it was.
Yeah, it was a couple weeks ago. The Texans at the time were 11-1. They were the top team in the AFC. They were coming in for a Monday night game. And I think, as I recall, a few weeks ago, a lot of people were sort of asking the question, you know, are the Patriots for real? They hadn't really had signature wins. They'd beat sort of inferior teams.
Right.
And it was a challenge for them. And they blew them out of the water. I mean, they killed them. They crushed them.
Yeah, and they really damaged their psyche, too. I mean, down the street, they went from the number one seed on last Sunday to the third in a wild card team.
Yeah.
So it's just amazing what the Patriots did to them. Now, can they do it again? I don't know. You know, Tom Brady against this defense and Jack Del Rio, the coach of the defensive coach. See, I'm getting back into hockey there, coach. is truly dominant against this defense and this coaching scheme. So in that instance, you have to like the Patriots in a route. But other things have happened. You know, look at the Baltimore game just a couple years ago where the Pats just came out completely flat.
Yeah.
And you think, remember Ray Rice in that game, the first play from scrimmage, ran for a touchdown, like 80 yards. And you imagine if Arian Foster is able to do the same thing on Sunday. It could be a long afternoon for the Patriots. But I think the bye is going to help them, because, you know, some guys that are dinged up, like Aqib Talib in the backfield, you know, even Tom Brady. Brady has been on his back a lot lately, and his offensive line has just been kind of letting him down. So, you heal the bumps and bruises, and you get that extra day or day or two to prepare for your opponent. I mean, Houston, you know, flew home yesterday, and now they've got to come back up here.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of a too much to ask.
Yeah, you kind of forget that there's like a human element to this, right? Because you see people breaking down sports, and they're looking at numbers, they're looking at statistics, they're talking about stuff, you know, trends, when this team played that, when this coach did that. But like at the end of the day, like these guys, they got to like wake up at a certain time, they got to get on a plane, they have to travel, they have to stay in a hotel, like, you know, they change time zones. All of that really like factors in. These are human beings that are like, you know, and you kind of forget that among all of the breaking down.
Sure.
And it's difficult to do something like that if you're the Texans, you
know? I mean, you only have to point to last, you know, the season ender against Miami, where, you know, the Pats won 28-0, and the Dolphins clearly did not want to be there in that cold, windy Foxborough. Yeah. You know, it was just, you could tell how uncomfortable they were, just their body language.
Yeah.
And then you look at a game like the San Francisco game where it just rained all night long. And, you know, that puts San Francisco in a little bit of their element. You know, that's kind of the weather.
They love the rain. Yeah, San Francisco rain. They're like, hey, we're at home.
And I mean, they're a tough,
hard. Have some Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat.
They're a tough, hard-nosed team. So in those elements, that really played well for them. And that's why they took that huge lead.
Yeah.
You know, clearly that was a very entertaining game. The Patriots came down from 31-3 to tie it. And then the last 6 minutes just kind of fell apart.
Yeah.
So those are two examples where you can point to it. And the other thing with the Texans is that they are a completely different playing field down there in Houston. You know, it's a retractable dome and AstroTurf. And, you know, coming to Foxborough sometimes can be advantageous for the Patriots, clearly. And what it looks like right now is that I think they're saying pretty mild on Sunday. So
what's mild? Mild for New England?
Yeah, like 39,
so
maybe
still
39,
kind of, but 40. Not mild for Houston.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so
I mean, that could play in the Patriots' favor as well.
All right, I like it. So one of the things you were just talking about is, you know, the fact that the bye week gives you a chance to heal from injury. And I want to talk about the injury thing because I'm fascinated by this. This weekend, yesterday's game, you know, one of the more entertaining games, although they weren't great this weekend,
yeah,
I will say. The football was not great.
It was subpar.
But was the Washington Redskins and the Seattle Seahawks and RG3, Robert Griffin III, who's their rookie quarterback and sort of the star of the future for them. I mean, this guy has been a godsend. They've been forever without a quarterback. And we know here in New England how important a quarterback is, having had Tom Brady for all these years. In the NFL, it's so important. And they finally have gotten this guy, RG3, who looks like he's the real deal. He's a rookie, and he's been playing through injury. And yesterday, he was clearly hurt pretty badly, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm fascinated by the way injuries are handled in the NFL. And what really drew it into stark sort of contrast for me was the fact that this was happening in Washington, and Washington, on the baseball side, their baseball team, they had this great pitcher, this great young pitcher, Steven Strasburg,
sure,
right? And last year, they shut him down. He wasn't even hurt. But they said, you know, this is a young guy. We're investing in his future. He's pitched so many pitches this year that we need to stop him playing. They stopped him, even though they made the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
They shut him down. He wasn't even hurt because they were invested in his future. And yet over here on the football side, you have this completely different mentality, which is you have a clearly injured player out there playing, potentially going to injure himself further. I don't get it.
Yeah. I mean, it really is a different mentality in that, you know, the football is the, you know, the tough guy on the field.
Yeah.
And in baseball, you know, they're athletes, sure, but they're baseball players. It's a little different. You know, when it comes down, there's always that John Kruk famous line where the woman asked him, you know, why are you smoking? You're an athlete. And he's like, I'm not an athlete. I'm a baseball player.
Yeah.
So there's some truth to that, really, because, I mean, you know, what are you doing in baseball? It's all about precision. It's not really about feats of athletic unless you're stealing bases or running for a catch. Football's a different beast, and I think that breeds a different mentality. In the case of RG3, you know, he was clearly hurt. I would have started him anyway. I would have started him in the game. But there was a point where even Troy Aikman was saying in the booth, you know, you got to.
Troy Aikman's a former quarterback.
Former quarterback. He's gone through, you know, multiple injuries, you know, a bunch of concussions.
Yes. Yep.
And he was saying, you know, you got to get him out of there. And
so why doesn't the coach pull him out? I mean, it's funny. And a lot of the talk afterwards, you hear analysts saying, well, the player's going to play. He's never going to tell you he's hurt, which, first of all, I find completely odd.
Right.
I mean, again, it's sort of an older way of thinking. And the NFL has come so far. I mean, they're protecting players in a way they never did decades ago. There's money on the line that just wasn't decades ago. You know, they've changed all these rules around concussions. So player safety, you know, players are coming out and talking about, you know, needing to financially protect themselves looking forward. So in all of these ways, they're sort of moving forward and acting very differently. And yet in this one particular way in this culture, it's holding on as if, you know, it's the 1940s still. And the player's going to say, well, I'm going to play no matter what. And the coach is going to ask the medical staff, can he play? And if he can, he's just going to keep him in there. And everybody's acting like they can't see what's going on. It's crazy to me.
And imagine you're a Washington fan today.
Yeah.
You know, on the one hand, you got the Nationals, and they were widely criticized for sitting Strasburg. I mean, if you want to sit him late season, fine. But once you get to the playoffs, don't you want that arm in there?
Yes.
You need that kind of talent in order to win. And they were rightly criticized for not doing that. And then on the other hand, you got RG3, who's your future at in the Redskins side. And there he is. And, you know, you've got flashes of Joe Theismann all of a sudden.
Yeah.
It's like they can't win. They really cannot win down there.
It's interesting stuff. I'm talking with Eric Wilbur. He is a sports reporter and writer for Boston.com. Sticking with football, not professional football, but what seems to increasingly be semi-professional football, and that's college. Mm-hmm. The championship game is tonight. This is Notre Dame versus Alabama. So speaking of taking football back to the 1950s, you know, this is two sort of very heralded programs who've been on different trajectories in the last few years. And they're playing tonight. I'm curious about this. You know, one of your colleagues, Chris Gaspar, in the Globe over the weekend, wrote about Alabama and Nick Saban's Alabama in particular as, you know, this completely semi-professional organization, if not professional organization.
Yeah, right.
You know, completely operating outside of the college. You know, completely sort of ignoring the fact that these are student athletes and really like running a football team. And then in contrast, you have Notre Dame, which is traditionally thought of as a school where the student athlete can still thrive. They have a 97% graduation rate of students in the football program. Are these schools as contrasted as they seem to be?
I don't think so anymore. I don't think you can really say that about any school that's in the NCAA these days. You know, there's such a pressure to win and to succeed at that level, but I think that, you know, ethics kind of go out the window sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there. I mean, I think there's a lot more similarities than we want to say there is about these two schools.
Yeah.
For instance, you know, Nick Saban will, if he wins tonight, gets a $400,000 bonus. Now you take that and you contrast that with if one of his athletes accepts a free meal, he gets in trouble with the NCAA.
Yeah.
There's a line that has to be drawn somewhere where we know, you know, do we need to pay these kids so that they're not getting into these situations? And it's just, is it a mentality thing too? I mean, are we so football crazy at these universities that we, you know, look the other way and think obviously, you know, that's the case in Penn State where, you know, the fans, even after learning about all the transgressions with Sandusky, you know, went to Paterno's home and were cheering him and saying, we support you. And it's kind of difficult for me to grasp because I didn't go to a school with, you know, I didn't go to a D1 college school. So don't really have that experience or
college football has religion experience. Yeah.
And it's just, it can get sick a lot of the time. Well, so
what's going on in Pennsylvania there? You have the governor who's suing the NCAA, trying to get all of their penalties completely eliminated. So this includes like no more scholarships, a $60 million fine, and other things. And then you have a state senator who on Friday also filed suit against the NCAA, claiming that their fining of $60 million and then spending that violates his oversight as a state senator over that area for allocating state funds because the state of Pennsylvania pays some of that money.
It's crazy.
How is there a way out of this? There's so much money involved in college athletics. And like you're saying, how do you get into this debate? Do you pay the players? I don't know. Then, you know, the other argument is, well, hey, they're getting increasingly expensive education for free.
Sure.
But not all of them are.
Right.
Not all of them are on scholarship. And of those who are, many of them are trying to get into the pros. They leave early. I mean, that's why graduation rates are low. Is there a way out of this?
I don't know. You know, I think we've been asking the same question for, 20, 25 years. You know, like I said, it's a culture that you would think that with Penn State in particular, that after 1 year, it may, you know, maybe percolate or it has died down. But we're right back to where we started. I mean, Bill O'Brien, the head coach of Penn State.
Who has Patriots ties.
Yeah,
I mean,
former
he was an offensive coordinator here.
Patriots, yep. You know, he had a pretty successful season, and kudos to him.
Yep.
He took a program that was in shambles and made it respectable again, or you know, somewhat respectable. But the second that he interviews with a pro football team, the fans down there go nuts. And he has to, you know, release a statement by, you know, I'm being faithful to the fan. Like, no, you're not. Just don't lie. You were looking for your next head coaching gig. It's not like you have this huge faithfulness to Penn State after one season.
Yeah.
But it's crazy. And I mean, luckily here, you know, people complain that Boston's not a great college sports town.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a lot of benefit to that because we're not as, you know, crazy about certain things. You know,
right.
it's a good college hockey town.
It's a better than good college hockey town.
I mean, absolutely.
I think if hockey were more, I think you'd have a lot more trouble here if hockey were more popular, right? If hockey were football, which it's not.
Sure.
You know, this is the center of college hockey. You got BC, you got BU, you even have Harvard. Mm-hmm. I mean, these people compete.
Northeastern.
Year in, year out. But it's just, there's less money on the line in college hockey.
Oh, sure.
So it doesn't get as dangerous. I mean, ultimately, I think it's a money thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's tricky. It's tricky. Now, speaking of college sports here, we do have a pretty good look in BC basketball team this year, right? I mean, they could be something.
Yeah, I mean, like we said before, unless they play Harvard again, they seem to have their trouble with Harvard. And that's no disrespect to Harvard, obviously, but it's just, you know, they're at completely different levels. I mean, at BC, you know, the athletics there have been up and down, you know, as of late. You know, the football team was in shambles. You know, new athletic director, new head coach there.
Have you met those guys or talked to them at all yet?
No, not yet. Okay. And then, you know, the basketball program got off to a real bad start. But, you know, now it seems to be rebounding. You know, are they, you know, a tournament team? You know, are they going to do well in the tournament? I don't know. I think it's a little too early to see that yet. You know, I think once you get into February, that's when you really get to separate which teams are the ones that can contend for the Sweet 16.
Yeah. And the college basketball thing, they have the big tournament at the end of the year, which is in contrast to what's going on in football, where you have this weird kind of selection process.
It's been so plotting,
computers
too.
And like, it's just kind of...
Yeah, these bowl games have been really bad. The Oregon game was a good one.
There are 70 teams in bowls.
Yeah.
There are 70 teams in bowls or something like that. I mean, it's just...
The Outback Bowl, the CarQuest Bowl. I mean,
they're on it like, it's like 11 o'clock on like a Thursday, and there's like some bowl going on.
Yeah. I mean,
how does that work? Is it television money that's driving that? Or
sure.
Like, what... Is it that, you know, TV, you know, is it ESPN who needs content and they sort of pay a lot of money for the rights to play these games, and that's where the money comes from, and then the teams get the money? I mean, how does it work?
Sure. TV money, sponsorship money. I mean, this is all the reason why we don't have a playoff system right now. I mean, we do next year, only a 4-team playoff.
Yes, sort of.
But we'll take it, you know, at this point.
It's better, right?
It just doesn't, you know, that's the only reason that we don't have it, because of the money. And it's a shame, because what could be... a phenomenal tournament. You know, I mean, people would tune in, even if you're not, you know, it would get big ratings in Boston.
People go crazy about the basketball tournament,
sure.
Right? I mean, like, people who don't even watch sports.
And part of that, they of do course, a, is
they
gambling.
Do a, yeah, we say gambling, but, you know, there are definitely people who are, like, real gambling. But, you know, me and a handful of coworkers, everybody throwing in $5 and like filling out a bracket.
Right.
I know that's gambling, but I sort of, to me, that's distinct distinct from somebody who's putting hundreds or thousands of dollars in and they're betting through a bookie or they're going to Vegas to do that. So that part drives it too. But I think there's just general interest in the fun of, this is a tournament, there's 64 teams, they've marketed it well, it's called March Madness. You know, you can pick a bunch of things. The president goes on ESPN and picks a bracket.
Yep.
It's fun to fill them out, you know. So, you know, people watch that. You could. It seems to me that you could easily replicate that with football.
Oh, sure. I mean, the money in that would also be, you know, huge. But again, from a sponsorship standpoint, you know, which is why we have the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl and all those. You know, though that money goes away to a certain degree with the playoff system.
Why?
So,
like, why can't it be the Tostitos Championship game and the Tostitos
it,
third
it
round
seems to make
and
sense,
the
doesn't it?
Outback first round?
But doesn't it seem to make sense?
I've never understood, like, why you can't just transfer sponsorship or use those, like, seed the bowls.
Yeah.
You know, keep them as bowls and then seed them. This bowl is, you know, eighth round. This bowl's the seventh round.
Really, the only reason I can even see for it is that, you know, maybe you want a Tostitos champion and you don't want to have to be, you know, the second... Just a step to getting to the championship. You know, it's like, okay, the Tostitos Bowl was a playoff game, but they don't have the Tostitos Trophy. You know,
right.
It could be something as dumb as that.
Right.
I don't know. It really is hard to figure out why the NCAA took so long to do at least something. People have been complaining about it for years and years and years, and it's just diluting the product. I mean, I'll watch tonight's game. I'm excited about it, but
But you wouldn't if it wasn't. I mean, you might not watch it with as much fervor if it wasn't Notre Dame and Alabama.
Sure,
I mean,
absolutely.
They have lucked out that you have these two marquee programs, Notre Dame, who haven't been, you know, this good in decades and decades, who are like,
the 80s.
You know,
a
stalwart
of
history.
Team,
right.
Yeah.
You know, and Alabama and Nick Saban, you know, the new Bear Bryant. You know, it's just that helps it.
Sure.
But if it was Oregon and, you know, Boise State.
LSU, Boise State, yeah. It's, I mean, it would get good ratings nationwide, again, but in Boston, at least we have a storyline now, you know?
Yeah.
It's the local kid versus...
talk about that.
The tyrant of Nick Saban.
Yeah, the Notre Dame coach is Everett Chelsea, born and bred, right?
Yep. Brian Kelly, and he, you know, he's built a pretty good program there,
yeah.
Obviously. And he's really taken over for what Charlie Weiss did in... Not demolishing it, but I guess that's a closer term you can use.
Yeah. And Charlie didn't really pan out at Notre Dame.
No, Charlie didn't really pan out. And it's, you know, just another one of the Bill Belichick coaches that have gone on and just not found success.
Yeah, there's a
Romeo
growing
Cornell
number
is another one.
Yeah. Josh McDaniels.
Josh McDaniels, I think he may have success.
You think he was just too young?
I think he was too young. I mean, he did start 5-0 in Denver, and then things just fell apart there.
Yeah.
I mean, people out there despise him, and I think it was because he came in with this attitude.
Yeah,
and I think
people
a lot
despise
of
despise Belichick too, though, don't they?
Well,
when he
wins. I think that's what happens. I think a lot of these coaches go out and they don't put their own stamp on their personality, and they act like Bill. You know, the same thing with Scott Pioli in Kansas City, the general manager. People said he was a tyrant out there, and he wasn't that way here. You know, he was a down to earth, personable guy, and I think a lot of guys make that mistake when they go out and do their first job. In McDaniel's case, I think he's better suited for the offensive coordinator. Clearly, he's a better coach than Bill O'Brien was last year. I mean, I can't remember the exact number, but I think it was 444 first downs the Patriots had this season, and that's the most in team history.
Wow. They ran a lot of plays, though, too. I mean,
sure.
they sort of implemented a whole new system by which, you know, emulating what's going on in Oregon and some other college football programs, really just sort of, they've clearly made some kind of mathematical decision that we're going to try to run as many plays as possible. We're going to do fewer huddles. And so it does seem to follow that they might have more first downs. But I hear what you're saying.
And well, if you put that into perspective, though, in 2007, when they had Randy Moss and they were this huge
juggernaut
scoring machine.
Randy Moss, that seems like so long ago now.
They had
it?
50 fewer first downs. And
wow.
It's just kind of, when you think about that, about how successful this team has been this year on the offensive side of the ball, it's important because, especially in the early part of the season, when the defense was so porous, you know, and just could not stop the run, could not stop the pass, could not stop the run. The fact that they have an offensive machine like this with Tom Brady is, one, to be expected, and two, it was, you know, it's why they're going to win. It's not because of their defense. And the defense is there to hold off the offense. And,
so
and I think that's
enough.
That's a big part of why they've ran so many plays. You know, if you're on the field, your defense doesn't have to be out there.
Yeah.
So it's probably the most dangerous offense in the playoffs right now.
All right. So you like their chances? You know what's interesting? This is the first time, I guess, ever in history, and this is in the AFC, for the 2 years running, the same four teams are the final four teams. So you've got the same four teams left as last year. Patriots obviously went to the Super Bowl last year.
But, I mean, should they have? You know, the Baltimore game, you know, Billy Cundiff missed that kick, and Lee Evans dropped the pass. I mean, it's...
You always need a little luck, though, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's kind of why
look
I did,
at that Giants Super Bowl that they beat the Patriots in. I mean, Eli Manning escaping, I always argue, closing his eyes and then throwing that ball up.
One of the most
amazing
plays you could ever see.
Unbelievable.
I mean,
and
it still hurts.
People forget that I think the play almost right before that, maybe Rodney Harrison completely dropped what would have been an easy interception.
Asante Samuel.
It was Asante Samuel?
Yep.
Yeah. Like,
Yeah.
How much luck does it take?
A little bit of a frustrating evening that night. And,
yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, it was the same way early last year when they lost to the Giants again. And it's for people with the Giants fans, friends, it's a little painful.
So you do predictions? Are they going to win next week?
Are they going to win? Yeah. It's probably going to have to be a lot closer.
Yeah.
I mean, the Texans, I think, know a little bit of what went wrong last time.
Yeah.
And they've got to fix that. You know, they're not going to come in here with the varsity letter jackets. Which was just such kind of a childish prank.
I think they were trying. I mean, they were trying to do something to motivate.
Well, they
called
it the biggest game in franchise history, and if that's the case, you know, there was just a lot of not really immaturity, but they didn't show experience.
Yeah.
And the Patriots are always a professional, experienced team in the way they approach the game.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a close one, but I do like the Patriots' chances.
And you like them? You think they end up going into Denver and we have Peyton Manning and Tom Brady yet again?
I think that's the matchup we all want, obviously. Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, the Colts couldn't win yesterday because that would have been fun, too.
I know, absolutely.
Yeah, Colts and Manning, and then to have Brady Manning the next week would have just been
Would have lined up perfectly.
Great theater.
Yeah. All right, real quick before I let you go, Celtics playing tonight. They had a big losing streak, just broke it. Worried about them, not worried about them right now?
I don't know. I don't know. They've proven me wrong so many times. Early in the season, I said, don't worry, they'll turn it on when they need to, just like they did last year. But they've been maddening. You know, they went on that West Coast trip and just looked like a shell of their former selves.
Yeah.
You know, I think they're talking about this DeMarcus Cousins kid from Sacramento in a deal. That would be good, you know?
Yeah.
The price is probably going to be a little steep with Avery Bradley, but he's a big talent and he can get down low. That's really what they're missing. They're missing size in the paint. And, you know, clearly the success last year was when Garnett went down there.
Yeah. Are they missing Ray Allen?
I don't know. I think there's some degree of that. I think that this team has got a little bit of an immaturity issue, which is kind of odd to say.
Because they're old.
With Pierce and Garnett, you know, class acts like that. I think management, you know, turned this team over to Rondo and said, you're the star, you're the leader, you know, we go where you go. And I don't think that's playing too well with guys like Pierce and Garnett.
Yeah.
Because there's clearly an immaturity issue with Rondo.
And there's character issues with Rondo.
And there's a lot of character issues. So, you know, I guess he's here for the rest of the year, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him, you know, maybe find the door at the trading deadline next month.
Well, all right. That's Eric Wilbur, Boston.com sports blogger and reporter. Hey, thanks for stopping by with us here on Boston Public Radio.
No
giving
problem.
Us the lay
Anytime.
Of the sporting land. And coming up next, Callie Crossley checks in with Marketplace's Bob Moon. They're going to go over the latest financial headlines. Do not go anywhere. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III. This is Boston Public Radio.